Welcome to Whatever the Case, Stryker's official ASC podcast, which features interviews with leading experts in the ASC space, focused on the clinical, operational, and financial considerations that go into ASC ownership. We hope to bring you valuable perspectives and insights to enhance your understanding of the ASC market, because whatever the case, we've got you covered. Welcome to episode 3 of Stryker's Whatever the Case podcast, where we are taking a closer look at what it really takes to build a successful ASC from the ground up, leveraging Stryker's New Build Playbook, an interactive guide that walks through the full ASC development journey across 8 key phases. In our last episode, we discussed phase 1, concept generation. If phase 1 was about shaping your vision, developing your business plan, selecting your partners, and securing your site, phase 2 is when that vision starts to become real. This is where critical decisions take center stage, from finalizing OR design and completing your blueprints, to selecting a finance partner and building for growth. Not just today, but 5, 10, or even 20 years down the line. You'll also be challenged to set realistic timelines, balance regulatory requirements with workflow design, and ensure that sterile processing and storage are scaled to match both your current and future needs. To help us unpack what it really takes to launch a successful ASC project, I'm joined by someone who knows this process inside and out. Today, Marty Rosenberg joins us. Marty is the former CEO of Forte Sports and Orthopedics, and after retiring from Forte, was hired to be the CEO of the Orthopedic Associates of Michigan and is currently helping the group through a strategic joint venture with the University of Michigan. He has spent decades working with physician groups across the country to develop high-performing ASCs. Most recently, he helped his group through the development and launch of a new center in Carmel, Indiana, which opened in 2022 and is currently supporting a project with the Orthopedic Associates of Michigan set to open in 2027. Marty's experience spans specialties, regions, and countless design decisions. And today, we're excited to have him here to share real-world insights that can help you get this critical phase right. So with that, I would love to welcome Marty to the podcast. So glad to have you here today, Marty, and really excited to hear from you.
Thank you, Dana. Thank you for having me on the podcast this morning. I'm thrilled to be here. It's been about 30 years that I've spent in orthopedics, and I think I've seen just such a wide range of progression in the specialty, especially around the ASC space. I recently completed the 10 OR project at Forte in Indianapolis, which was the culmination of years worth of work. During my time, I also was the owner of an ASC management company that had built, developed, run over 75 ASCs all across the United States. So I think that the experience that I had in all of those ASCs, which were not only orthopedic, but they were multi-specialty as well, allowed me to form a basis of both the process and the knowledge to execute on some of these projects. A lot of that came into play with Forte. Those ORs were an interesting project because it happened in the middle of COVID, which created a whole set of different dynamics that we had to deal with. Again, just more tools to put in the tool chest for the future. But we also used a lot of the knowledge and experience from that project in Indianapolis to form the basis for the planning and execution of this new project that I've taken on in Grand Rapids, Michigan, in a partnership with the University of Michigan. And that project has just started, but the formation of it and the basis of it is very consistent with what you talked about in the prior podcast and where we are now. This actually is real time. So the things that I'll be talking about today are current decisions that we're actually making right now and the mistakes that we've made, opportunities that we've had, and a pathway we're going to move forward.
Thanks for the background and introduction. I've been close to you and your center for the last few years and have certainly heard you talk about future-proofing your center and just all the thought that went into the Forte project. So I'm excited to hear a little bit more about this new project as well. Maybe if you could start with just sharing a little bit about some of the most critical design decisions you're making, especially those early on around OR sizing, sterile processing, and storage.
Yeah, I think the OR sizing, it became probably one of the greatest discussions and debates, not only when we had built the ones at Forte in Indianapolis, but currently the discussions within Michigan. And I think there's this almost this misperception because, I think surgeons walk into an OR, they're not necessarily measuring the square footage, but they expect that they'll have adequate space. And it's a lot more complex of a design that I think people give it credit for. The OR design and the size of the OR has evolved dramatically. So when I was designing and executing on ORs 10 years ago, those spaces were 450, 500, 550 square feet, and they were adequate. Today, those spaces would be completely inadequate, especially for orthopedics, and especially if you plan on doing things like spine or joints. The modern ORs today can become very congested. And when you're looking at those designs, you need to take into consideration the type of cases that you're going to have. If you're going to do, I'll say joints in particular, and you choose to do robotic, then you have a robot in the room. That robot has a robot specialist. Then you have a CT in the room and imaging folks. You have the circulator, nurses, PAs, you have the rep for the joint system that you're using, and of course you have the surgeon. And before you know it, what you thought was a very spacious room becomes very, very claustrophobic. So you have to take that into consideration about what are you going to be using the rooms for, because 550 square feet in a room that you're going to be doing total joints would be tight. It actually kind of cascades from there, because I'll have an anesthesia machine, of course. Then you have to look at suspending other assets off of the ceiling, because that's another decision that you make, because you've got all of these power cords. Everything is driven by power. So you have, you know, slip and fall and safety issues with tons of power cords all over the floor, with lots of people in a room centered around the patient. So when you start actually digging into the details, it becomes far more complex. And I know a lot of these things are a little minutia. Making decisions about the little things now make a huge decision on the overall comfort and safety of the ORs and the surgeon satisfaction when they go into those ORs. The complexities around that are considerable. So I think, you know, you've got to engage the key stakeholders really early on, understand what you're going to be using the ORs for, the types of cases, the number of people, the technology selections that you're going to have. All of those things play a critical role in the final OR designs. You know, you've got those ORs, and that's all part of that future proofing. So if you build an OR too small, you may lock yourself out of future choices that will bring other assets into the room that will, again, whether it's robotics or whatever the next generation of OR technology will be, you've got to think 5 or 10 years ahead, because the building of the building will be the most expensive thing that you do. It's more expensive than buying the assets that are inside. The physical structure becomes the constraint for your growth and development. So if you make design choices now, it could substantially impact the type of cases and the number of cases that you can do in the future. Expansion of ORs, especially in today's building and construction environment, is outrageously expensive. So again, I think you have to take in mind that the decisions you make today will affect the overall operations, profitability, scalability of your OR 5 or 10 years into the future.
And I know when we were preparing for this, you were talking about just all of the different perspectives from various stakeholders that you have to be able to manage. And it sounds like, you know, your role is really to be that person who can kind of take a step back and look holistically at the needs and the project, and really just try to balance all of those different perspectives to align on a decision that's going to work best for your group.
Yeah, I think there are two critical decisions or mistakes that I've seen played out over the years, and it's actually been relatively consistent. And frankly, we made the same mistake that I'll be talking about in the ASU that we're building in Michigan, and that is you bring two key stakeholders into the game way too late. Bringing physicians and vendors into the conversation at the onset of the discussion is actually critical. I think a lot of people start with the administrative staff and architects, and it's a logical place to start. The problem is that the key stakeholders that you have are the surgeons, bringing them in so you get an understanding of what their wants and needs are, and then bringing the vendors in that you ultimately will select to make sure that the goods and services and products that they have are considered early on into the design phase is equally as critical, because before the architects start building a building, you want to make sure that they're building a building that is consistent with the physician's wants and needs and their future vision, as well as where they want to, you know, what they want to be doing in those ORs years from now, as well as understanding the compatibility issues that the vendors will bring to the table. Because it's not that you're not just being sold a table, lights, or booms. You also have an enormous amount of knowledge about how those assets work within the ORs and the key or critical design factors that you need to take into consideration to maximize the value of those assets, as well as to minimize any of the environmental risks, things like disruption on airflow based on the how you position the booms, the towers, and the lights. That air garden and the air handling systems are all work synergistically together. There's a lot of research that shows that there's a lot of disruption of the airflow with the positioning of the lights and the positioning of the table and the ingress and egress. And Stryker has, you know, particularly a design group that is very well versed in those and became, at least for the Indianapolis project, a critical part of our design process early on, just when we had already hired the architect, and that paid off significant dividends. Now, the ability to be able to put the VR glasses on and look at those assets real time in the pre-design phase to understand how it will actually affect the ultimate design, it's just super critical. I believe you can waste a lot of time and money if you don't bring those key stakeholders in on the front side versus later on in the process.
That's such an important takeaway. Bringing in surgeons and vendors early really does shape the entire trajectory of a successful OR design. And it's definitely a great reminder that those early decisions can ripple across the whole facility. Shift gears a bit. While the OR understandably gets a lot of attention in the design process, there are other critical spaces that often can fly under the radar, but can make or break a center's operational efficiency. I'm talking about sterile processing and storage. These areas may not be flashy, but they're essential to keeping the surgical schedule running smoothly and are often the areas that we hear discussed after the fact that, you know, centers wish they had invested a little bit more time and thought into. So, Marty, how do you approach SPD and storage design in your projects, and what have you learned along the way?
Yeah, give some love to SPD folks. It's a really hard job, and they do, you know, those groups that do a great job are an amazing part of the team. It has the potential to be the weak link. Both, you know, if you don't design it well and you don't, you know, staff and manage it well, it is really the lifeblood of an ASC, you know, not being able to get the assets when you need it, or how you need it, done correctly to the ORs, especially high volume ORs, is critical. I mean, orthopedics now, if you look at, you know, cut the close times and times of cases, they've been compressed so much over a decade that the turnover of these assets is even more significant than it had been in the past. So it even puts even more pressure on SPD. So when you're looking at that, you know, you're going to make choices on the technology that you're going to use for rapid but accurate sterilization of your products. And that becomes a critical issue. You've got to have the capacity that if there is a problem, that you have the ability to do flash sterilization to keep the cases going. So there are a lot of decisions that you have to make with SPD. And I'll be honest with you, I know enough about SPD to ask the right people the right questions about SPD. So I've learned over time what are some of the critical factors. You know, whether it's a one tray system or you're going to do cart washing, all of those were parts of the discussion that we had. Yeah. You have not only the technology for SPD, you also need to take into account in your overall design, where is SPD? So if you've got a single floor design, that's fine. You have to then make sure that you know where you're going to, or how you're going to manage your sterile supplies, whether they're going to be primarily housed in SPD and you'll just be pulling cases into case carts, bringing them up that day, whether you'll have specific assets within the ORs in the sub-sterile area, whether you're going to do all packs or you're going to separate items and do peel packs for things that aren't used very often. But all of those discussions need to happen in the design phase, because the ability to design SPD to support the needs and the expectations of the surgeons and the ASC staff becomes a big part of that collaboration. You know, bringing that SPD executive on, that leader of SPD on early on into the process, will allow that better collaboration. It's all about, you know, developing collaborative teams, because everyone's bringing their specific subject matter expertise to the discussion. And every one of them is important in making the correct decisions on the build side.
I appreciate all those comments on SPD and storage. And when we were putting the new build playbook together and kind of weighing perspectives of many who have recently gone through projects, a little rule of thumb that was recommended then was SPD should be roughly a 1-to-1 ratio to your OR square footage, and storage about a 0.5-to-1 ratio to your OR square footage. But certainly, like you mentioned, Marty, involving those stakeholders early in on the planning process to avoid those costly mistakes later on is key. And certainly when we hear about ASC projects and lessons learned, I feel like SPD and storage are often cited each and every time, and we wish we built bigger. Appreciate you sharing all of that.
And then there's a reason for that, by the way. And the reason is they don't bring those key stakeholders into the conversation early. Mm-hmm. So everyone around that process, the design process, is making assumptions of what storage should be or what SPD should be. But most of them have never either managed SPD or had to manage the assets in an OR. So they don't know the logistics that come into play. And so they undervalue storage as just a waste of space, and SPD as well, because they just don't know enough about it, of what goes into it, what the size of the assets, the number of assets, the number of people, et cetera. So again, that's the reason why it's really important to bring those key stakeholders and let them advocate for the departments they're going to be responsible for.
Yep, I totally agree. One part of phase two that we haven't gotten into a whole lot yet is one of the key milestones, and that is selecting a finance partner. So any thoughts on that key milestone?
Yeah, obviously, you know, no money, no mission, no project, right? So it becomes obviously a very big part of the consideration, especially nowadays. The capital markets are so tight and relatively conservative. But ASCs are something that I think, you know, universally are seen as a great investment in healthcare. So I think there's a greater willingness to land on ASC projects, especially if you've got, you know, great strategic partners. And we had health system partners in both projects in Indianapolis and in Michigan. So I think that really helped us in those capital markets. Everything is joined together. And that's part of the challenge in moving some of these projects. There is a sequential part of the project, and you have to do one thing before you can do another. And then there are things that you have to do concurrently, because one is dependent upon the other to make another decision. So you can't just do it in a vacuum sequentially. So, you know, this is actually a problem that we had in our Michigan situation, where we're doing the design development. You know, we chose vendors too late, and we brought construction management teams in the bidding process too late. So the problem with that is, while we were able to negotiate, you know, with a lender, we don't have final lending documents yet, which is something that we're working on, because you have to do appraisals based on final cost, and the final cost is going to come from the subs actually weighing in on what the project's going to cost, because the lenders are going to want a final signed off budget with construction agreements prior to the final lending. So what you end up doing is you end up working concurrent processes between the design, build, sub, and bidding process with the finance process. So it's one of those things that you have to work down parallel tracks for, and it becomes super critical. You know, within financing, it's really complex. You've got to make a decision whether you're going to go out to a money broker, whether you're going to do business locally with a bank if they have the debt capacity to manage a large project. If you're going to go out to national firms for those dollars, how are you going to stage the financing? All of those are key decisions that I think, again, you have to work with your team and your local financing institutions that you've had relationships with to make those decisions. The build and the rate become some of the most significant legacy items of the transaction, because you're making a decision to both build and finance that'll be a legacy for 10, 15, 20 years. So understanding the consequences of those decisions and getting into it early is really critical. And that's probably a theme that I keep on talking about, get into it early. I think people will assume that we have plenty of time. It takes over 2 to 2 years to build an AOC, depending upon its size. The financing and the pre-work can take a year or more. So, again, financing is not something you want to bring late into the game. You want to do that early as well.
Absolutely. So thinking about this phase of the new build process and all of your experience here, if you had to do it again, or if you started your current project over again, what is something that you would have approached differently?
I think I would have approached the whole concept of design and partnerships very differently. I think there's a tendency that the design is just quick. It just happens. That there's plenty of AOC design concepts out there, and the concept generation is relatively easy. It's not. I mean, we found ourselves actually going back to the drawing board 2 or 3 times as we got additional stakeholder input, finishing the original design as a draft, and then bringing doctors in, the surgeons in, who had significant design changes, and construction managers and vendors. We kept on modifying those designs. And frankly, at some point, time becomes real money. And I think that bringing people in early and making early decisions on who you want to partner with is probably the most critical piece of advice I could give. Everybody underestimates they underestimate the planning and design phase, and they probably overestimate how long it's going to take them to build the building. The biggest consequence on both cost and time is on the design phase. The design phase, you're not spending a lot of money, but as soon as you get into the build phase, if you make critical errors in the design phase that are going to affect your building, and you have to modify it at that point in time, it becomes exponentially more expensive. So, my advice is start early, get key constituents on board as quickly as possible, and then manage that process to avoid making costly mistakes and delays in your finishing of the project.
I appreciate those parting words, Marty, and really appreciate you being with us today and sharing your experience with our listeners. To our listeners, if you haven't already, check out Stryker's New Build Playbook. It's available at stryker.com/ASC, where you can explore phase 2 in more detail and then follow along with the full 8-phase journey. We will be back next month covering phase 3, where we'll review operational planning, which is the breaking ground of your new center, and then key decisions like hiring of a clinical director, selecting an accrediting body, determining anesthesia coverage solutions, and a whole lot more. Until then, I'm Dana McInnes, and this has been Whatever the Case. Thanks for listening.
Marty Rosenberg is a paid consultant of Stryker. His viewpoints expressed in this podcast are his own and don't necessarily reflect the views of Stryker. To learn more about Stryker's ASC business, visit www.stryker.com/ASC.